Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the first Sunday of each month from 3 to 4 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of listeners. Today's hosts are me, Elios, and
Royce,
and
Ciara.
We all attend Willits High School.
Our topic today is justice. Justice is a philosophical concept of the morally correct assignments of goods and evils. Justice is a virtue where everyone gives and receives what is due to them. Fairness, equality, and impartiality are synonymous for the word justice. Criminal justice is a system of practices and institutions of governments directed at upholding social control, deterring and mitigating crime, or sanctioning those who violate laws with criminal penalties and rehabilitation efforts. Those accused of crime have protections against the abuse of investigatory and prosecution powers. A number of people believe that these powers are frequently abused.
Those of you over the age of 50 probably grew up thinking that the purpose of incarceration was to protect society from dangerous people while providing time for the imprisoned to be rehabilitated. Certainly, jail was seen as punishment, but efforts were made to help the accused see the error in their ways. The hope was that the prisoners would return to society with positive intentions and self-improvement. While this social retraining is undoubtedly true for some people who spend time in prison, many prisoners are seriously damaged by their legal timeout. America has come a long way in prison reform. The Massachusetts Assembly in 1736 ordered that a thief on first conviction be fined or whipped. The second time, he was to pay treble damages, sit for an hour upon the gallows platform with a noose around his neck, and then be carted to the whipping post for 30 stripes. For the third offense, he was to be hanged. After independence in 1776, most states amended their criminal statutes. Eventually, the death penalty was reserved for first-degree murder.
By the 1870s, prison reform was on the agenda in parts of America, and the term reformatory was applied. Some prisoners were offered educational and vocational training. In other parts of America, primarily the South, prisoners were leased out to do the grueling work in chain gangs. Early in the 20th century, some prisons began to look at offenders as social deviants who might benefit from psychological or psychiatric intervention. The practice of probation was instituted. Most jails retained poor food, no medical care, and guard brutality. But it was prison riots in the 1950s that led to a serious reform of incarceration. The American Prisons Association changed its name to the American Correctional Association, and the rehabilitative emphasis was formalized in the 1955 United Nations Standard Minimum Rules for the Treatment of Prisoners.
In 1980, there were 350,000 people in jail in America. By 1990, the number had grown to over 1 million. There are currently over 2.3 million people locked up in prisons across America. There are over 170,000 people in California prisons. New prisons are being built at a record rate. 48% of all prisoners are African American. The term prison industrial complex may be defined as the intersection where governments incarcerate citizens to protect society, while private corporations make huge profits supplying equipment and building new jails. Many say that the prison industrial complex is the fastest growing industry in America. These corporations need prisoners to justify their growth.
The current rate of released prisoners returning to jail is 70% within a year of release. Over half of the prisoners in America were placed there for crimes which involved no violence, primarily for drug sales or usage. Some people point to the Bible for a reference on justice, an eye for an eye. Mahatma Gandhi pointed out that an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. Retributive justice means a proportional response is due for a crime. Restorative justice means making the victim whole and reintegrating the offender into society. Rehabilitative justice aims to reform the offender. We see this in community service sentences. Reparation is justice in the form of a payment to a victim or the community. Some justice is meted as a deterrent, a long prison sentence to send a message.
Deterrence brings up the notion of the death penalty. Supporters of capital punishment often claim that fear of execution prevents murders. Others feel that some criminals are unfixable and it is too expensive to keep them in jail for 40 to 50 years. In some families, the murder victims look at an execution as a rendering of justice. Last fall, California voters rejected a ban on the death penalty. There are 726 inmates on death row in this state, though no executions have taken place since 2006. Maryland has just become the 18th state to ban the death penalty. The death penalty is being sought for the man accused of the massacre in a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado. The death penalty is banned in the European Union based on their charter on human rights. In the United States, many people in prison say that they were not guilty of the crime that put them there. There have been numerous high-profile cases where a guilty verdict was later overturned when an alleged witness recounts their testimony, and some prisoners have been set up for political reasons, such as Black Panther member Geronimo Pratt, who spent 27 years in prison before being released for a murder he did not commit. Courtrooms are said to return verdicts, not necessarily justice.
When we talk about justice, we can wonder about the balance in our own lives. Everyone has experienced events that have felt unjust. Sometimes these events roll off our backs, and sometimes they have serious long-term consequences. At some point, we all have had to justify our actions to someone else.
We are going to discuss justice, the legal system, and prisons for 20 or 30 minutes, and then open up the phone lines for your questions and comments. We're at the Willett Studio, and our phone number will be 707-456-9991. We really appreciate your involvement in our shows and hope that you will join in the conversation. Royce, how do you define justice?
Well, I have a definition of justice here. It's just behavior or treatment, a concern for justice, peace, and genuine respect for people, the quality of being fair and reasonable, the administration of law or authority in maintaining miscarriages of justice.
Well, I think it's a little complicated because it all depends on what perspective you're looking at it for. The person killing the person could think that they were doing justice by killing that person, thinking they deserved it. And then is it justice to kill them?
What do you think about it, Ciara?
Well, if you're going to kill somebody just to, or because they killed somebody, it doesn't really make sense because you're reprimanding someone for doing that act, but then you're just doing the same thing to them. So I feel like that side of it isn't very clear. It's not a good justification for killing someone.
So do you think we should be focused more on maybe the rehabilitation side of justice rather than the...
Yeah, make people better so we don't have this 70% prison return rate that we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we train people to come, if we trained people in the first place not to commit the crimes to go into jail, then we wouldn't need to worry about having to worry about what we should do to people who are killing people. And then if that happens, then they should be trained, for lack of a better word, to help society more than just getting sent right back to prison, because then it's pretty counterproductive to let them out in the first place.
Mm-hmm. When we talk about justice, we really can't have a vengeful attitude towards the accused, because it just creates like a cycle of like, You did this to me, so I want the equal punishment on you, and that never gets anything fixed.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Elias?
Yeah. It's that, in that notion, it's more of revenge than justice, and that's not really right. So what about prisons? Do you guys think that prisons should be more livable?
Livable? I think we're talking about that later, Elias. We should talk about criminal justice.
Oh, okay. We have a schedule here, don't we?
Yes. We have to stick to that. So criminal justice, you guys.
How are we defining criminal justice, Royce?
I don't know. Ciara, how are we defining criminal justice?
Well, criminal justice, would that be what we were just talking about, as in people getting the death penalty because they killed someone, or having to sit on death row for the rest of their lives?
I think that all has to do with criminal justice.
How much evidence should you need to convict someone?
With DNA, it's become quite a lot easier to have evidence to convict somebody in modern day. But what happens when people change the evidence to work in one way or another?
And just because the DNA test doesn't match them, it doesn't necessarily mean they're innocent. They could have had an accomplice.
Mm-hmm. Or people who are brought up to talk about this, like eyewitnesses, and how they can be unreliable in court. Mm-hmm.
They can be paid off, or they can just not remember what they see, right?
Or even the people presenting them, like attorneys and stuff, they can abuse their power, or they can want to look tough on crime. Therefore, convicting people who wouldn't normally be convicted.
And I read somewhere earlier that the juries are usually not a set of peers as they're supposed to be. They set them up to suit their cause. So it's not even just in some situations for that.
Yeah, lawyers and attorneys and stuff can pick and choose, in some cases, the jury that they have. They get like one or two sayings, or being able to pull out one or two people that they don't find would fit their cause. I'm not sure on the specifics of this, but they can, and in order so they can sway the court in their own way.
Recently, there was a case where a man who had been in prison for something like 17 years was found innocent based on new DNA testing, and that brought up the issue of whether we should go back and do DNA testing for a lot of people that have been locked up for things in the past.
Where DNA proving innocence is concerned, that when DNA is used to prove their innocence, that 15% of those cases I read were convicted by false informatives, like eyewitnesses and things.
Mm-hmm.
So I read somewhere that there's like a factor of like 70% of wrong convictions when there's like eyewitnesses or something.
70%?
Oh, wow. I'm not sure if that's exactly right, but I saw that somewhere.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, the criminal justice system refers to a couple different institutions, and it's kind of a process. There's the law enforcement with the police and sheriffs and marshals, and then courts and judges and things like that. And then the third one are prisons and probation officers and things like that. And so do we think that is, like, good right now in our country and the system?
It's amazing how many different jobs we need just to keep people following the laws.
Yeah, and some things are brought up into the higher courts that shouldn't be brought up in there. Like some claims and suings and just things that shouldn't be seen by a judge and maybe should be in like a small claims court is instead brought up onto like the national scale.
So do you think there's racial profiling too, along with some of the cases and in the criminal justice system?
Oh yeah. What I read earlier, that there's like crazy amount of percent of African Americans in jail. I can't find that. It's right here. And it says that 48% of all prisoners are African American. So there's some racial profiling.
And
there's
such a minority in our country.
Yeah, they're only like
13%, isn't it?
Yeah, they're 13% of our population, but they're 28% of all arrests.
Hmm.
And there are 40% of all inmates in jail.
And why do you two think that is?
Racial profiling.
Well, because there's things in the media portrays certain races as more crime worthy.
Yeah, but
and things like that. And then we as a society still believe that going back to, I mean, times of slavery, there's still racist elements in our society, even if people don't want to admit it.
We as a society, we like to objectify people. And African Americans are easy to objectify because of, like, what you're saying.
And they're stereotyping and labeling, like, just because he's black or Latino or something doesn't mean he's in a gang. But certain shows and, I mean, news, they just portray them that way.
Media.
Yeah, exactly. So
we always need a scapegoat.
Exactly.
Yeah. But those racial profilings are based on those numbers, so are they really the cause of those numbers, or?
Maybe it helped. It really ties in together, I think, because people get fearful, so there's more arrests, and then they see these numbers, and they're like, oh, look at all these people who have been arrested, so there must be they must be doing something wrong, and they must be violent, and so it really feeds into one another. But once they go to jail, then don't they get, they're even more objectified, because it's like, look, you've been incarcerated, Runtz, so there must be something wrong with you, even though they could have been like a non-violent offender, or they're unrightly accused or something.
And it's hard to get back on their feet once they get out of prison because they can't get a job with their criminal record or anything.
It's really hard to no one gives them value after they've come out of prison.
So we should focus on rehabilitation?
Definitely.
And what do you think is going badly with that right now? And what could we change?
Prisons need to be less scary. People come out of those places mentally scarred.
Yeah, they come out of prisons and they're more violent because there are deals inside prisons. Like,
there's crime going on inside the prison that makes them worse off when they get out.
Isn't that crazy? Like, they're charged by crimes, and then they do more crimes, and then they come out and they're so scarred that they continue to do more crimes. So,
crime. That's what they know.
Yeah. So where does that change? So, what else we could do to maybe change this crime circle?
I think we should put more money towards education, and that's not just because I'm the daughter of a teacher, but because if we educated the youth, and we wouldn't need to worry about it in the future, because they'd have more knowledge as to things they could do, and they wouldn't be forced to resort to crime. And so if we set it and did education instead of spending all their money on prisons, then it could solve a lot of problems.
But the people that end up in the justice system are skipping all their classes in the first place, probably.
Maybe we could treat prisoners and people with more compassion and respect, because that leads to, like, a vengeful attitude, like I was talking about, and, like, an eye for an eye, and we all end up blind, so.
Need to work harder to prevent rape in prison.
So when people talk about crime, they say that we should be tougher on crime, but that doesn't lead to less crime. We have, like, a 5% greater lockup rate than any other industrialized nation. Like, in, like, the second behind us is Russia, and it's crazy. Um, So I guess jail sometimes leads to just future incarcerations, because once again, it's all they know.
Mm-hmm. So do you think we should be reworking or try to rework people's perceptions of jail and what they should be doing afterwards, or just not getting in it? Because some people, I mean, where they come from, everyone's getting put in jail, so it's almost like not a big deal. It's almost not even.
And once they're like, gone, once people expect them to go again.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And people expect it of them, so we should not just automatically assume that just because you come from a certain area or a certain race that you're going to end up in jail, or because your dad was in jail or something like that. Because then it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, how we see them. And we can give them like all the education and like job training and counseling that they can need, but once they come out of there and they don't have value in society and they can't get that value, what else are they going to do but then to relapse on their on what they've done before and just end up back in prison?
We should talk about how we think it should be instead of how it is for a little bit.
Okay.
How do you think it should be, Elios?
I think it should be more about rehabilitation, like we've been saying, with the prisoner meeting with a therapist and figuring out what made them do these things and preventing it from happening again.
How do you think we could prevent it from happening again?
By just figuring out why they did it and figuring out the problem before sending them back into society.
And if they do go to jail, instead of some kind of rehabilitation center or something, that maybe the violent offenders and non-violent offenders should be separated.
Yeah.
So there isn't, like, this terrorist rape attitude hierarchy in jails.
How do you think we should solve the problem like Elios was talking about, Royce?
Well, I think we should definitely focus, because we don't, as a society, we expect them to learn their lesson in jail, yet we do nothing for them. They go there and they sit in a jail cell and then these jail corporate complexes are paid by the government, and like before the United Nations stepped in, that they could do just whatever they wanted. They didn't have to feed them, they didn't have to like clothe them, give them places to live, nothing. And you saw how that turned out with all the rioting and whatnot. But I feel like we're kind of doing that again by not rehabilitating them or just sending them out again. Just, oh, you've been in here for a while, you should be fixed.
Do you think poverty is a factor in crime?
Oh, yeah.
I think poverty is a huge factor because, I mean, in terms of crimes for stealing things, they steal things because they don't have money to buy them, or they want to provide for their family or things like that. I mean, they need money. And we have a huge poverty problem in America. And if we fixed that and focused on fixing the home life first, then, I mean, there would be less things to go on. What about you, Royce?
Maybe changing around. Oh, we're talking about poverty still. Yeah. Poverty. Like I was saying about like the value thing, like if you're poor, you're not very valued by society. So if you don't have value, you may be more inclined to do wrong things.
But the working class is the most important part of the society. That's what the whole rest of the society stands on.
Doesn't mean you're valued.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the whole 1% and Occupy Wall Street thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, and also with the poverty, you don't have the means if you're set up for a crime or get convicted of a crime, you don't have the means to hire a lawyer that will help you get out, whereas someone in the upper class would be able to hire someone who could get them out whether they're guilty or not. And they get put with the public defenders who have tons of other people and tons of other cases to work through, but and they can't spend time on that case. So do you think we should fix that too?
Definitely. It should be more about whether they're actually guilty or not than who has a better lawyer.
Also in poverty, there's drugs and whatnot in there, and then, like, we were talking to Dan earlier, and he was talking about the three strikes rule, and how you could, like, be stealing something, you'd be caught with drugs, and then the last one, you could be stealing a pizza, and then you'd end up in jail for, like, 20 years. And how it's so easy in America today to be put in jail for not even a good reason at all.
Yeah.
Like what is the need for jail itself? Like, we spend so much money on it, but the need is for rehabilitation, but and not.
Mm-hmm. So do you think for judgment. People who commit nonviolent crimes, do you think they should get put in prison? And then people who commit murders or rape or things like that, should they be in prison, or should they have a more serious action or some other form of punishment?
I think there should be, like, a different type of prison for people who aren't really that violent or doing socially wrong things. Like, does doing drugs hurt other people? No, but
it can.
Well, it can. Well, some drugs, yes. But then there's really a difference between that and then going out and shooting somebody. The level of violence there is different.
Because if you're on drugs, I mean, unless the drugs make you or put you in a state of mind to where you go out and shoot someone, it's only hurting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Or the people around you, if they notice, like, huge change and things like that. But, so, what do you think we should do with people who, like, rape and murder and things like that?
Well, if you lock them all up in one place, that'd be a very scary place.
That would be a scary, very scary place, and they do that. Mm-hmm. Think about that. But what do they do with those people? Do they lock them up for life? What do you do when you're in jail for life? Do they put them on death row? What about things like that?
That's when they don't care anymore, and they just mess with people in the prisons.
Yeah. So what are you really going to do when you're stuck in a jail for your whole life? Would it be better if you are on death row? Say, I mean, you're.
Would they want to be? I wonder how many of them would rather be on death row than in prison for life.
And then, like we said earlier, the crazy amount of people who are on death row, even in California, is 729, and yet they're there, and we've set them out to be executed, yet only 16 have been. So, what are we doing? Should we, like, well, we saw when the proposition, the act, what was it? The one where we're trying to overturn the
36
that we still want the death penalty, yet we're not doing it, and in the
proposition it was written that if the death penalty was banned, they'd have all those people work to pay back the families of their victims,
and then that they would be put onto life without parole after they were after this prop was passed. So what should they what I'm trying to say is, what should they be? Should they just be in jail for all their lives while we pay for them, or could there be other uses for them? Like, mm-hmm. What do you guys think?
They already have them work and such.
Well, what about working, using prisoners as labor, or like involuntary, like maybe enslavement? Maybe is that better than death row?
They can't exactly force them to do it if they don't want to.
I feel like if you have killed somebody and taken somebody else's life away and you're on death row and you're just sitting there for most of your life because we don't put a lot of people to death here in California, then you should be doing something and make yourself a productive member of our society, even if you're in prison, because we expect that of everyone else. So they shouldn't be an exception. They should be put to work or doing something. And not necessarily like slave driving, but I mean, they've killed someone. So yeah. It's not like they don't deserve it, almost.
Well, if they don't want to do the work, what are you going to do to them?
I think that should be the option, like a life of hard labor or the death penalty, something like that. Like, they can have a choice of what they want to do.
That's intense.
Probably choose the death penalty.
Yeah.
But with like, labor in for our society, that does bring, like, certain aspects of society to them. Like, it gives them, like, hard work, and it has them help out society in some way.
Exactly.
So I think that's better than... So if you are in prison for life without parole, that maybe being able to help out society, build stuff like school desks or something, I heard, or work for $1 an hour to pay back your the people you've wronged or your family or something, I feel like that's better than the death row or even life in prison.
And for everybody, that would be an individual choice, whether they think dying would be better or whether helping, like, our society would be better. What were you going to say, Elias?
But these people are mentally ill, so wouldn't it be better to try to fix them? Are they fixable?
That's another...
'Cause right now we're talking about punishment.
Yeah, that's another thing with the education, is we need institutions for mentally ill people, and we need them to be not educated the same meaning, but they need to have a place, because right now we don't have any places for mentally ill people, and that's the problem with the shooter that just happened in November and Sandy Hook, yeah. And if he had had an institution where he could have been, not like the mental...
Well, he shot himself.
Yeah, but not like...
Beforehand.
Not the mental institutions they had way back when, where people could parade around and watch them and they get shock treatment and things like that, but where they could actually be taken care of and their needs were met, because we could have prevented that.
In Europe, the prisons are actually a much nicer place. Like, a lot of places in Europe, you get your own apartment. And in Norway, the maximum prison sentence is 25 years, and you see a therapist all the time. And they have... You can't deny that it works there. They have a much lower rate of prisoners.
I would think because it would be so much easier to reintegrate into society. There's a goal there. You have, like, 20 years. And then by the end of that, with all the counseling and the living quarters and stuff, that by the end of that, you are probably prepared to go back into society.
And why does the U.S. have such a higher rate of prisoners than any other country?
Because I think it's because, like I was saying earlier, that we want to be tough on crime, but being tough on crime isn't what we need.
But Europe has a lower crime rate in the first place.
Maybe it's because Because of the things that we're, like, incarcerated for, like drugs and whatnot, maybe that should be, like, a social health issue rather than a judicial, issue.
I feel like that goes back to talking about the acceptance and things like that of poor classes or of the crime. Because in Norway, they have a much lower poverty rate and things like that than we do. And they probably have better, they probably have institutions for people who are mentally ill and things like that. And so we don't have things like that. And they also have pretty good public colleges that aren't that expensive.
Maybe.
And it's largely socialized, like socialism and things like that. So...
Maybe it's because we have this, jail, the corporate justice complex. What was it, you guys? The complex thing. Anyway, industrial jail complex. Yeah,
where corporations are making prisons for profit instead of. Prisons being actually a place for justice.
It is capitalism, so
yeah,
there's profit to be had for everybody, and so people invest in jails because it's a corporation, and everyone gets their money. So maybe that's why we have
a corporation. Should be more owned by the government, like socialist.
But it was owned by the government, and then they sold them out to corporations. So. Maybe there should be more government, maybe government control
because
on jails should be more of a necessity.
Mm-hmm. Because the way that goes with companies owning all these things, it gives them such influence over the nation.
Maybe us and the government should change our response to, crimes and how... Yeah.
Because if we're saying that like Ilio said, that we want them to be more government regulated, but our society as a whole doesn't really like things like that. Okay. Or there's a lot who don't.
Where'd it go?
We have done a lot of time. Anyway, so now it is time for the call-in portion of the show. So, let me find that. It is, we are going to open the phone lines now. The phone number is 456-9991. If you don't happen to live in the Mendocino County, it's 707-456-9991. Everyone is welcome to call. We'd especially like to encourage the youth, their parents, and concerned friends in the listening audience. Please call in if you have questions or insights about justice, the legal system, and prisons. What does justice mean to you? How do you think that our judicial system can be improved, and how?
Do you feel safer because 2.3 million people are locked up in prison? Do you think the attitude of those in prison is improved by their stay? Should prisons reinstitute the idea that they're going to rehabilitate their inmates? How many people will be in prison 10 years from now? What should be done with those prisoners whose real problem is one of mental health and or drug addiction?
The phone number is 707-456-9911. 9991, sorry. When you call, please be ready to turn down your radio or we'll get a very confusing echo.
Echo.
The number is 707-456-9991. Please call and be a part of the discussion on justice in prisons. Please call soon. The show will be over at 4 o'clock.
You're on the air.
Hello. I wanted to make a comment to you guys. I don't know if you know that you have to pay to go to jail.
Really? I did not know that.
What?
This might not be true with federal jails, but it is with state jails. Like if you get arrested for drunk driving, you have to pay. To go to jail.
Well, they can fine you, but I don't think they make you pay for...
And it's like motel fees.
It's, oh, hotel fees? Oh.
40 to 80 or so a day.
Do you know how much, do you know how much that you have to pay when you are sent to a jail?
No, I don't.
That's interesting.
I'm facing this, but I don't know it just yet. I know that I'm going to be paying 40-something a night.
That on top of fines and, like, bail and whatnot, that's crazy.
Well, yeah, it's like a corporation making money.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you very much. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah. You guys are really talented to be able to get the police to put that siren in when you were just talking.
Wasn't that great?
Phones in prisons. That was outstanding. yeah, several points. The previous caller, what he said is true.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand, it's based on the ability to pay when they do that. However, it creates what can effectively be a debtor's prison, which is illegal in this country, or is it? And this is part of the problem when you have privatization, or what I call piratization, of what formerly were government bodies' purview, what they were supposed to do, and it's exactly why the government takes care of those kind of things. So profiteering doesn't come into play. Now, each and every one of you that has a car has a product of slave labor. Do you know what it is? Prison slave labor. You know what that product is?
Is it the license plates?
Exactly. Bingo. And a lot of the things that you all brought up are very pertinent as to what should be done, the rehabilitation aspect, which, you know, you go to look at the titles of a lot of these prisons or so-called correction institutions. There's nothing correction about them. It's either about profit or strictly incarceration and punishment and retribution. And I do believe that the only point for them should be for correction or rehabilitation. Some of them even call themselves rehabilitation centers, and there's nothing at all about them that goes in that direction. One thing that I would like to ask you all is, what do you think about basically after a crime has been committed, retroactively making a young person an adult who was a child or a young person? In other words, I'll put it in these terms. They weren't an adult prior to the crime, but suddenly they become an adult for doing something so horrific and awful when it's being found that really people's brains don't fully mature till somewhere between the ages of 27, 23, maybe at the earliest, maybe even as late as 30. Everybody's different. And I'd like to hear your take on that as far as someone being charged, quote, as an adult, when they weren't an adult, when they were charged with the crime. Ex post facto is supposed to be illegal in this country, and the whole purpose of the difference between juvenile and adult crimes was because of that. There you go. Thank you.
Okay, so what do you guys think about
that? Well, it's a lot less harsh on minors, and I think that's why they do that, is because they don't want someone to get off easy on a murder charge or something.
But also, as soon as you turn 18, you're considered an adult. And what he was saying is that some people don't even mature till they're as late as 30. So.
But he was talking about how minors are being charged as an adult if their crime is bad enough.
Yeah.
And, well, that's hard to say because they shouldn't just get out of juvie at 18 and be on their way.
Yeah.
Commit a crime at 17.
Maybe it's, again, who really sets the, I don't know.
Hello, you're on there.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the show and thanks for the call.
Thank you.
What that one gentleman was referring to about the privatization, about it becoming a money-making thing, that barely scratches the surface of the whole thing. I was there. I done that. I was in a Midwestern state. And the way it was set up was to, they let a private company come into the prison, set up an industry, had the people working for slave wages. And these weren't people that murdered anybody or hurt anybody bad like that. Mostly drug offenses. And they had them working for a buck a day. And they were competing with all their products on the private market. So the amount of, you know, if you're not paying insurance because the state took care of that, the state took care of all their needs in this private company set up inside a prison and was competitively competing against private industries and making a butt ton of money. It's all exploitation now, and it's all, you might as well be going back to the slave days, and it's essentially the same system. But a judge agreed to it, so nobody can complain.
So,
what were they making in the prison?
Pardon me?
What were they making in the prison?
Oh, they were making desks, as you had mentioned. They were also making beds and cabinets and stuff for, like, mental institutions, hospitals. They were making barbecues. They had a metal shop. They were making barbecues and picnic tables for, like, at state parks, federal parks, stuff like that. And then they also had an automotive refurbishing shop where they were refurbing the all the plow trucks and the salt trucks and that sort of thing.
So they've been focusing on making money rather than rehabilitating prisoners?
Well, they actually had, at that point, they had education. You could get a GED through them.
Wow.
You could go to cabinet-making school. You could go welding school. You could go to all these things that would be applicable to the private industry they had there, so that as soon as you graduated that course, they would put you into that part of industry and then have you like a lead man teaching other guys.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that that could maybe help them reintegrate into society better?
Well, in that aspect, I believe if a guy went through the whole course, it could.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he had a skill and a trade when he left there.
Yeah.
And they also had an upholstery shop too, and they trained you for that. But all the menial workers, the guys who didn't want to go to school, they would just teach them to run a sander, or you know, they gave them their one little area, and they said, "This is what you do: you either drive pegs, or you sand wood, or you do this." And so the guy never really got a total education out of it. He just learned how to run a sander, learned how to drive pegs into a board.
Other than education, did they offer like therapy or counseling?
Not really. Not unless you were an extremely dangerous being or something. You were talking about killing yourself or others, and then generally they just separate you from a bunch of them and then have you see a psychiatrist, give you some pills to chill you out, and just keep you off in the corner.
Okay, well,
generally.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure, have a great day.
You too. You're on the air.
You guys talked a lot about rehabilitation, but you didn't really touch on prevention. And I'm curious how you guys think that a lot of these crimes could be prevented.
What do you think, guys?
I think some things could be more prevented by keeping kids in school more, almost. I mean, we spend so much money on prisons and trying to keep them in prisons, but we don't keep a lot of money on trying to keep kids in school and things like that. And so if we shifted the money more, then that could help prevent things. But I know there are a lot of other things. There are programs we could do. There's a lot of things too. What do you think, Elias?
You could fight poverty.
Yeah, poverty, I think, plays a big role in crime in like a community.
For sure.
Maybe controlling gangs and stuff. I don't know.
But the gangs are, people are thrown in jail because of gangs. So that goes down to preventing in the first place.
Yeah.
So you also talked about how there's a lot of racial profiling going on. But it's also true that certain cultures and growing up in certain areas will make someone more likely to go to jail. So you guys were talking about, like, poverty. And so a lot more African-American people live in poverty. And that can cause, you know, more problems. So they will be arrested, too. So that leads to them being arrested more. But so I think that that comes back to prevention as well. Like, are there ways we could do outreach, or maybe not even necessarily like education in school, but like community education and like mentoring and stuff?
Yeah, maybe like a stronger connection to the community itself.
Because I know in like huge urban areas, you go to a school where there's thousands of kids, because there are schools like that, that you're just a number and you aren't, you're not personally known. And so there's no expectations of you, and you don't have any expectations except for the ones your family or your friends put on you. And if you're in that area where there are gangs and some of your friends are in them or your family's in them, then you don't have any expectations except, yeah, I'm going to go in a gang too.
Yeah, you're going to turn in the, yeah.
And so...
Or even like crime itself.
Or you don't have any expectations for the future because no one around you is doing that and no one around you is telling you you can do that. So, mm-hmm.
But how do you think that that could be prevented?
I'm not sure. Like, maybe, like I said, a stronger connection to the community, and like to have people there for you, and not being able to like have stuff where you don't have to do crime to get it or something. What do you guys think?
What do you think, Elias?
Sorry, I kind of zoned out. What was the question?
We're talking about prevention and how we could prevent people from committing the crimes or joining gangs or things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of what you were saying about education.
Yeah, so...
But specifically, like, how educating, like, to have classes about it, or just, like, a more general presence of anti-crime stuff in the media, or what?
Well, because anti-crime stuff in the media, we have things like that, but, and it doesn't really seem to be working. And so I feel like if we just increased that, it wouldn't make that huge of a difference. I think more along the lines of, I don't know. It's a hard question because I feel like that's one of the major problems that we are facing, is that we don't know how to prevent the things from happening.
Yeah, I don't think there's really a clear answer.
And so I think there just needs to be changes made, because obviously the things that are happening in our society right now aren't working.
I do like that when you're education wise, because with more education, you have like a wider viewpoint on the world, and then you can get like work and more of a means to what you need rather than turning to crime, because you understand things better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And the way...
You're welcome.
Okay. You're welcome.
Do we have another caller? Oh, yes. No, we don't. Oh, yes, we do. You're here on the air.
All right, let me just step away from the radio. It's easier than turning it down. Yeah, this is an interesting topic. It touches on, I would say, on politics and human rights. And just practicality, I think a lot of the, and you have to consider what really is the totality of crime. You know, a lot of crimes nowadays are, especially for bigger amounts of wealth, are white-collar crimes, and a lot of the times those people don't wind up going to prison at all, or they go to country code prisons for a few years or something.
Definitely.
A lot of the reasons that the prisons are so crowded nowadays is because of get tough on political decisions, politicians scaring voters about crime, the same way they start wars by scaring voters about our enemies overseas. And that started back, the current round of it started back in the 60s in the Nixon administration with the get tough on crime policy. Combined with the war on drugs, which has been a total failure rated by everybody who's ever been involved in it, but still politically a good idea. But I just want to interject that there's you look at it from the fairness aspect, there used to be more of a human rights, more of a liberal charity towards the poor, and poverty does have a lot to do with it, especially because of the limitations with the legal system. Poverty has a lot to do with who actually winds up going to jail, aside from who's committing the crimes. But there is another approach besides this retribution, which is what it's, you know, the pendulum has kind of swung back and forth of social attitudes, whether we should be punishing criminals, you know, they're bad and they deserve to suffer for what they did, or, you know, the other idea is, oh, there's something wrong. Is there something we can do to fix or avoid this problem? And so what we've come to now, for various political reasons, is pretty much of just a retribution system, and it's a pretty harsh one. And it falls particularly harshly on people who can't afford lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
But what I wanted to say is the other approach is restorative justice, which is involves staging confrontations between the perpetrator of the crime and the victim, and having them actually talk to each other and work out a contract about what would be appropriate to compensate for it.
Yeah.
And it depending on how much property damage there's been or something, this works particularly well with young people, which is where it starts. Teenagers are the ones who, you know, you're usually either a career criminal or not by the time you're 20, you know, in most cases. It's a system that's been around for a while. It's had considerable successes. People who go through these programs tend to be much less likely to wind up in jail again. And we've had a program like this in Ukiah. I think it's kind of, I was involved in it for a little bit some years back. I think it's kind of petered out now. But it's something that I think is worth looking at, especially if this kind of falls in between preventing it and doing something about it. It's a way of doing something about it that has the most likelihood of preventing it happening again. So VORP was the name of the program, Victim Offender Reconciliation Program. So you might want to consider restorative justice and not just retributive justice when you're going to look at the problem of crime.
Thank you. Okay, so I think that's all for this month's of Youth Speaks Out. Our hosts today have been me, Royce.
Elias.
And Ciara.
So Youth Speaks Out is produced in cooperation with the Safe Schools Healthy Students Bronco Project, Building Resiliency Opportunities for the North County. For more information about the Bronco program, please call Pat Sanborn at 459-5314 or email at patsanborn@willetsunified.com. Please visit the Bronco website at sshsbronco.org. Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 11262, Willits, California, 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of the show, and listen to many hours of previous programs in streaming audio. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KXYZ. Those are the views of those who have expressed them. Youth Speaks Out is aired on the first Sunday of each month. Our next show will be in 4 weeks. That is May 5th at 3 p.m. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in May.